Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on this episode, we will be discussing Josh Trank's 2012 superhero film without any actual superheroes in it, Chronicle, as well as debating the merits of a possible sequel. But first, let me introduce my co-host, who has just as poor of a name as this movie, Donnie Nelson.
What is that supposed to mean?
You know what it means.
Poor name?
And you are just as poorly named as this movie. And my other co-host, who can't figure out what her sexuality means, Caitlin Sellers.
As your wife, that's very true.
No comment.
Can't determine what your sexuality means, especially based on how you feel about Dane DeHaan.
What? No.
That's less right. of a... That's
my sexuality, yeah. I can't figure out what I'm unattracted to about
that's part
him.
Of your sexuality.
This is not the right place to have this discussion.
Well, too bad,
I feel like we should start
it.
Over.
Caitlin can't
this
tell
is where
if
we're
she
going.
Thinks Dane DeHaan is hot
okay.
or not.
No, I definitely think he's hot, but sometimes I think he's not, and I can't figure out what it is about his eyes.
Yeah, let's so in the future, let us do a feature in which we go through all of Dane DeHaan's films and go, hot or not?
Or not.
Yes. So all right. We have that to look forward to.
Let's throw some pictures up on the Instagram, too, of him in different roles, and we can ask people, hot or not?
That'll be our first YouTube video. For
I'm
the
excited,
clicks.
Donnie. Okay.
Hooray! Donnie, what's the worst thing you saw this week? I ask as you take a drink of something.
The worst thing I saw this week was not something that was bad, but it did not engage me enough to watch the entire thing. And what I watched this week was The First Hour of Magnolia by Paul Thomas Anderson. And I didn't not enjoy the 1 hour I spent with it, but I could not watch a three-hour movie. That thing's fucking long.
It's intimidating.
But, like, Tom Cruise is crazy in it. John C. Reilly is, like, his lovable doof self, and, like, that's a weird movie where he, like, he went for it, and I was just not ready for that kind of intensity, so I had to stop watching it. It's not, it's the worst thing I watched this week, but if I finish it, might be the best thing that I saw this next episode, so we'll see.
All right. Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff in that movie that I really like, and there's also a lot of stuff in that movie that is not entirely necessary. But I do agree. Tom Cruise is great. John C. Reilly's great. Philip Seymour Hoffman's great.
Right, yep.
Yeah, that's
redheaded
about it.
Lady. You know
oh,
who
yeah.
I'm talking
she great.
About.
She's great. Caitlin, what's the worst thing that you saw this week?
Okay, so I have an actual answer, and then I have an answer that might be more acceptable to you. So my actual answer is that I finished watching the show Dead Like Me, and I didn't enjoy the ending. The ending is the worst thing I saw this week.
Makes sense.
Are you going to make me talk about a movie, or is that okay?
No, it's okay.
All right. Well, there we go.
All right.
I didn't truly enjoy the show either, but I watched all of it.
Well, yeah, and I can't remember the last time someone said, you know what my favorite part of that show is? The end. Honestly, like, it's really the friends we made along the way. Like, it's always the journey. It's never the end. You can't just say, like, oh, that Sopranos show? This really sucks, but that ending was amazing. Like, no one says that.
So, I don't know. I feel like maybe there's some show out there that's like that. But probably how I'm going to feel about Twin Peaks. Right. My favorite part is going to be when it's over.
I feel like, especially with The Sopranos, that's the opposite. Most people love the show and hate the ending.
Yeah, but no one talks about The Sopranos after the Game of Thrones ending. Because that just destroyed that show. No one even wants to think about it now.
I don't know. What do you think is worse, the Dexter ending or Game of Thrones ending?
Dexter.
Well, thankfully, I stopped watching Dexter like after season 4. which it was still okay then. And I was just like, I'm fucking done.
Is that with Rita? Did you
watch this? Yeah.
The Trinity Killers season 4.
Oh, that season that was so good.
That was just, the ending where Rita died.
That's very, yeah. That's when you should stop watching the show.
I was just like, yep, I'm done here. But that first season, I will debate with anyone, is one of the best, like, contained stories first seasons of all time. It's one of my favorite. Like, just watch the first season of Dexter and just marvel in the glory of it. And then don't watch any of the rest of it.
Yep. Although we got one of the greatest memes of all time. Or videos. Surprise, motherfucker.
That is. That
Home
makes
fries,
all...
motherfucker.
That is the first season. I was going to say that makes the second season worthwhile, but that's still the first season.
Yeah. Second season's just bad.
Yeah.
All right. The worst thing that I saw this week was a horror movie called The Little Stranger that doesn't have very much horror in it, and really there's nothing going on in the movie at all. It was very boring. Nothing happens. There's even less happening than in The Woman in Black, which is a movie where notoriously nothing happens.
Yeah.
Wait, who's the main guy in The Little Stranger? Is it Domhnall Gleeson?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that one was bad?
Yeah, it's not good.
I'm so disappointed because I was so excited and creeped out to see this movie.
They nail the atmosphere, but nothing else happens.
So, like, there is a ghost?
I don't remember. It was that boring. If there was a ghost, it didn't make that much of an impact on me.
Wah, wah.
Where did you watch it at? It was on Prime.
No, it was on some TV channel at work. I don't remember.
Boo. Well, I'm going to try and find it so I can watch it.
Have fun wasting 2 hours of your life.
If I'm creeped out.
It'll feel like four. All right, Donnie, what's the best thing you saw this week?
The best thing I saw this week, if we're talking about a movie, it would be, I rewatched Tron Legacy. Tron Legacy is a very good movie. I put, both the Trons at pretty much the same level. They're both, like, these visual spectacles that have, like, okay characters in them, but mostly it's just Jeff Bridges being weird. Mostly why I went back to it is because I'm a big fan of Red Letter Media. I recommend any of the stuff that they do. And they did an episode where they were reviewing the first Tron, the second, and Tron Legacy. And the first Tron is very boring. Like, and as much as it was a visual spectacle back then, it's not really, like, it's not really engaging. It's just this weird thing that people have nostalgia for and watch. And I like it a lot just for the nostalgia of it, and I like the atmosphere. But, like, Tron Legacy is, like, straight up, like, a really good, like, summer blockbuster. Like, it's not super deep, but there's enough stuff there to keep you engaged. And, man, those visuals inside the computer world is maybe... It just looks so good. That's usually... it wasn't on my top 10, but it probably would have been. It was, like, maybe in the top 15.
We'll have to do Tron Legacy sometime, because that's another movie that, like, I just remember being boring as shit.
You should watch the first Tron right before it, then.
And I know it's a movie that you have great affinity for, so I would love to give it another shot and see if I enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, other than just listening to it for that fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah. All right, Caitlin, what is the best thing that you saw this week?
The best thing I saw this week was kind of a hard choice. It was probably Clockwork Orange. I had seen, like, most of it, a little over half of it, but that was, like, 10 years ago. Over 10 years ago. It was, like, in high school. And I'm old. And so we finally, like, I got it from the library, and we watched it, and... It was as amazing as I remember, and it finished up as glorious as everyone... I mean, like, it lived up to the hype. That's what I'm trying to say.
It was a lot funnier this time through than it's been ever.
Yeah.
To me. Yeah.
Maybe being an adult and not relating so much to the teenage angst.
Has helped, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, that was fun to watch.
Right. I mean, just like as an adult, though, it is kind of fun watching it because at one point I was like, oh, I can totally see why, like this guy that I was friends with in high school, like, was totally obsessed with this movie. And, oh, and then I remember asking you, like, which of your friends from high school were obsessed with this movie? And when you, like, listed off a couple of them, I was like, not surprised. Not surprised at all. Like, I feel like it's kind of, I don't know, A Clockwork Orange is almost like a rite of passage for teenage boys. Like, you have to watch it because there is so much, I don't know. I think it's, like, relatable. I think that's just, like, how teenage boys, this coming from a woman talking to two men, like, I don't know. I just feel like maybe all the angst is relatable, and that's why they like it so much, because it's chaos and it's, like, the world that you wish.
I feel like this is the art house or auteur's version of Scarface.
Ooh, you know, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Because that's another, like, really heavy dude bro teenage movie.
Right. But go ahead, Donnie.
I would say that if we were talking about, like, what sins or, like, what the theme is for both of those, I would say that Clockwork Orange is more taps into who you know who are, like, the anarchists in your life. They love that movie.
Yeah.
As opposed to Scarface, where I feel like that's just either, it's, like, a sad mix between greed and nihilism and just, like, capitalism. Take down capitalism. That's what I'm saying. Socialism rules. But
fuck the system.
Welcome to our socialist movie podcast.
Oh, welcome to our punk podcast where we only talk. Yeah, go Bernie. Feel the burn. Yeah, hashtag good content.
Anarchy.
Yeah. So that's what that was my feelings on.
No, but I totally think you hit it on the nose with everything else.
All right.
Jason, what's the best thing you watched this week?
The best thing that I watched this week is a movie that I feel like I watch once a year just to remind myself how good it is, and that was The Silence of the Lambs, which is a... Okay, so I do just quickly want to say, this is a side story, one of my favorite things from growing up, after I saw the first Silence of the Lambs movie, and I found out they were based on books... I told my parents, I was like, I want to read the books. And my mom was like, no, you'll turn into a serial killer. And so, of course, my response was, well, fuck you, I'm going to read these books anyway. So
well, I did, read and, it in secret.
Yeah, and then I'm not going to turn into a serial killer. And that's exactly what happened.
So far.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah, you don't know what the future holds.
Although, to be fair, I never read Hannibal Rising, so maybe that's the one that turns you crazy because it's just so bad. Although
that is a book, though?
Hannibal Rising?
Yeah.
It's a book.
I didn't realize that was... Was it written by someone who wasn't the original author, though?
I don't believe so.
Because that's that's just a bad movie.
It is. First off. No, so Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, and Hannibal were all written...
Yeah, that's the trilogy.
That's the
trilogy. They were all written.
But they were all written, like, as a trilogy. And then he wrote another... And then Thomas Harris wrote another book... And then I feel like he had, like, a kid go to college or something, and he needed some money, so he wrote another Hannibal book.
Yikes. You ever have any interest in watching the TV show?
I've watched the first season and half the second season, I think. And I really like the show a lot. I just haven't finished it yet. Because as it's very similar to Rectify in that it is a very slow-moving, slow-burn show. And whereas in the movies, I feel like the main appeal of watching, like, Red Dragon and Hannibal and stuff like that is you get to see Anthony Hopkins being Hannibal Lecter. And in this one, it's Mads Mikkelsen, and he's great. But you also don't get to see him really be Hannibal Lecter. At least not the crazy psycho killer. You get to see him be, like, the therapist Hannibal Lecter.
Right, but that's kind of the appeal, isn't it?
No, it is. And I'm not saying that, like, it's bad. I'm just saying that, like, I think my expectations were a little off going into it.
Sure.
But, like, I still really enjoyed it. Like, in the and I already had this spoiled for me, or I figured this out before I had it spoiled for me, but the third season depicts, I forget the character's name, but the main guy from the first book, is the main character of the show, other than Hannibal. And in the third season, they have, like, a romantic relationship, which is kind of cool, and, like, a different take on things. I will still happily defend and say that I think the best portrayal of Hannibal Lecter is Brian Cox in Manhunter, and that movie far too often goes misremembered or unremembered by most people. But yeah, no, I really, really like The Silence of the Lambs. I think one of the craziest parts about it is the fact that it's either, like, right on the line or it's right under 2 hours long, which to me is insane because that movie has, like, 4 hours worth of material in it. And it's all told so effectively and so well that I just love it. It's so great. It's one of the few movies that it's one of the few longer movies that I can watch and never have to check and see how much time is left because I'm just enjoying myself so much. So
I'd like to start this by saying I really like Silence of the Lambs, but that was like one of the horror movies that I finally watched when I was like an older teenager that I was like horribly disappointed in.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But only because my mom has said that, like, it was the scariest movie she'd ever seen. So when I finally sat down and watched it, I was like, ah, yeah. Like, I'm gonna get the, like, shit scared out of me. And then it was this guy, who I found more fascinating than scary. And so when I asked my mom, she's like, yeah, but, like, it's the mental kind of scary. And I was like, well, you should have said that. Ooh. Because that's not what I signed up for.
Therapy. You know, real quick,
to have this fun conversation, Donnie, did your parents tell you they're like the scariest movie to them?
No.
No? All right. Because my dad did. He told me the scariest movie that he ever saw was Ransom, starring Mel Gibson.
Terrifying.
What a thought. Give would have said The Exorcist. No.
Which I love. I think Ransom is great, but I don't think it's the.
It's like peak Gary Sinise.
It's good. Yeah, he's great. All right.
Well, back to more disappointing movies. I was also disappointed in Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm. They're just not for you. I would recommend you probably watch the third Exorcist, then. That's probably more your style.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Poltergeist scared me. That was a good one.
Because the third Exorcist is the one that William Peter Blakely directed, right?
Yes. And it's actually, like, terrifying. It's not like the first one where, like, if you're really religious, it's like, because I have a friend who, like, watched something like The Last Exorcism, and, like, she can't stand, like, well, pretty much any movie that has exorcism in it. And, like, it scares the hell out of her. But, like, mm-hmm. So, like, if you're religious, the first Exorcist is maybe the biggest thing. But, mm-hmm. like, the third Exorcist is, like, it's definitely more of a psychological, like, horror film, and it's closer to something that's actually terrifying.
I do just quickly want to take this moment to retell the story about my brother and how I recommended that he watch The Last Exorcism, because I really enjoyed it, and then when I asked him what he thought, he said that he thought it was the stupidest thing ever, and he turned it off after 5 minutes. Because it was just some old guy explaining how to do an exorcism or how to fake an exorcism. And I was like, Matt, come on. You gotta watch more than 10 minutes.
Right? Oh my goodness.
Because that is, to be fair, that is how the movie starts. Yes. But after 10 or 15 minutes, it turns into a typical exorcism movie.
Yeah, and, we all need to have like reasonable cutoffs for us not enjoying a film. 5 minutes is not
half
enough.
An hour.
Yeah, half hour. I would say half hour at least.
Yeah. All right. I mean, depending on the movie. House of a Thousand Corpses gets 10 minutes.
What?
I mean, no. that's I've all you need. Like, when Captain Spaulding leaves the screen, you can shut it off.
All right. Let's get into Chronicle. So, before we get into our actual discussion, I do just want to throw out a couple of fun facts that I learned while looking up this movie. One of which was that this film was supposed to be like a hard R, possibly even NC-17. Did you know that, Donnie?
I'm not saying I don't believe that, but that doesn't sound like they were making this movie.
Well, okay, because originally Josh Trank wanted to make Brightburn. Like, he wanted to make
a movie. I got a lot of Brightburn from this movie.
Yeah, where the three leads turn into villains and proceed. And, like, the image of Dane DeHaan ripping the legs off of the spider, he was supposed to do that to his dad.
Yikes.
So. I would have watched that for sure. Heck yeah.
So, like, that was one example. But yeah, I also learned that apparently Josh Trank made the three leads live in a house together for 15 days before they started shooting so that they could build that real chemistry. That real chemistry. Oh, and then last little thing that I really appreciated that I found out was that all the music in the movie is not put in post at all. It's all recorded through whatever stereo or phone they were playing it through at the time, which was something that that's something that drives me insane about found footage movies, when they go in and add things in post and you can clearly tell that it's been added in.
Yeah.
Besides
the CGI, which was not up to snuff for this film.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So I guess
that last scene.
I guess let's just start talking about it. I mean, this is old enough. I don't care if we spoil shit. If you haven't seen Chronicle, that's on you, brother.
You're gonna set up the basic premise.
That's on you, brother. All right. So
I don't ever do that again, please. As your wife, I'm formally asking.
Complaints.
The basic premise of this movie is that Dane DeHaan, Michael B. Jordan, and some other kid whose name escapes me stumble upon a hole in the ground, and in the hole in the ground they find a crystal, and they all touch the crystal, and then they all get telekinetic powers.
Mm-hmm.
And
Alex Russell plays Matt.
Yes, Russell. And the whole movie is shot like found footage. And the way that their kind of justification for that is Dane DeHaan's character Andrew just constantly has a camera going, and because he's telekinetic, he just kind of lets it float around him.
Mm-hmm. It's like one of his powers is cinematography. Ooh, it's good. I did like that part of it, because every other found footage film, you can't make that excuse like, oh, why are all of a mm-hmm. sudden you're doing like a dolly shot? This is supposed to be a handheld camera, but they mm-hmm. make it work.
No, they do, and they do it in some really creative ways. I appreciated that when there's a lot of the action scenes, one of their ways seemingly of getting around having to do heavy CGI was to just like shoot it through shitty video recording devices,
mm-hmm.
Like the gas station fight or the fight through the hospital.
I think they were clever in they didn't just use Andrew's camera. Like, when they're fighting at the end, and then the scene that you and I laughed at, where the wife's trying to tell the husband to get away from the windows. So it's clearly, like, you're supposed to be listening to, like, what's happening in this apartment, watching, and, like, through his camera, watching them fight. And so it was kind of nice that it was also, like, adding footage from other people witnessing these events together.
So, and the only other thing you really need to know for the plot, if you haven't seen the movie, is that at one point Dane DeHaan turns evil.
There's more to it than that, but you're not wrong.
I mean, yes. There is, but turns evil in a typical supervillain archetype sense. So, my question for you guys, I know that, Donnie, you brought up the CGI a little bit ago. I mean, what did you guys think of the CGI? Did it work for you most of the time? Was it shitty? Was it okay? Was it beautiful?
Who do you want to go first?
You can go first, Donnie.
Okay. I would say it didn't bother me. Like, I don't feel like I had to, like, suspend my disbelief. Like, I knew what I was watching. And, like, it definitely, I would be like, oh, look, there's some bad CGI. There's true evil in this world. But I was like, okay, I get what they're doing. Like, I can go with it. I don't have to, like, make a big deal out of it. This is kind of a scrappier film. Like, it's lower. It has a lower budget than what it probably should have. And for what the budget was, they did fine. There's some, I think they put a lot more of the money into the later half because they needed to try to make that ending fight scene in the city look as good as it could. Otherwise, that could turn really bad really fast. And I think they did everything they could with the ending scene. But, like, when you see, this was the most jarring thing, is during the talent show when he is when he's juggling real balls. And then it turns to the shot where he's juggling CGI balls, and you're like, okay, you need to not do that because you're drawing attention to it so abruptly. It's the smaller things that take you out of it instead of, like, oh, the big action fight at the scene or at the end. That's kind of a big CGI fest, and you just get used to it at that point, as opposed to the little things where you're like, oh, they're floating a baseball, like, somewhere near the beginning, and you're like, that looks bad. So those are my critiques on this film's use of CGI.
I think that for me, like, I agree, it was a lot of the little things that I noticed, because for some, like, when I don't know about you guys, but, like, I'm more forgiving of the bigger stuff because I don't expect it to look super real.
Yeah.
It's more like I just expect it to look passable. And, like, the cards during the talent show, which, don't get me wrong, like, the talent show might be my favorite scene in the whole movie, or one of them. But the cards, when he pulls them back up into his hand, was one of the silliest looking things ever. And I think that part of the reason, at least for me, is just that everything goes just a little too perfectly. Like, if there had been a little bit more shake or a little bit more error to give the, you know, the illusion of, oh, he's actually doing this, then I think I would have been a little bit more on board. Caitlin, what did you think?
Well, I did only watch, like, half the movie this time around. But I have seen it before. I don't know. I thought it was fine. I just have an issue with movies with the concept of people flying in general, because it always looks weird. You can always tell what kind of harness they have on, where it is strapped, like, where it's sitting. Everyone's body looks awkward, and I know that, like, it's hard to make it look realistic because humans don't fly, so we don't know how our bodies would adapt. So essentially, like, it's just the idea that you're suspended in air, but it just always looks so bad, and I just hate it. But the shakiness of the camera, I will say, did kind of work in favor, because like, with found footage, I was concentrating so much more on, like, trying to see what was going on, that in those scenes, like, when it's Steve and Andrew in the clouds, like, during the thunderstorm or the lightning storm, I wasn't paying attention to it because I was paying attention to, like, what was going on. So they had that working for them.
My biggest complaint about the flying stuff was that Andrew always looked like he was, I don't know, trying to balance on, like, a pole, like, on his belly button. And
I agree. I was looking at stills from the movie.
Yeah, and then Matt is just like standing there. Matt and Steve are just standing there like, hey, what's up? And yeah, they look like they're just lifting off the ground.
Showing Donnie a picture right now.
And
that's the thing too, is that first scene where they're levitating or learning how to fly is like, oh, just conveniently they're at this construction site where there's a crane that's like half erased in the background. Like, no, I see what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. All right, so outside of the effects, I think that my favorite scenes in this movie were like the talent show and just the scenes where they're just kind of goofing off with their powers.
Mm-hmm.
And exploring what they're learning, what they're able to do, exploring what they're able to do. Because I really like this cast, and I think that the three actors do have really good chemistry. I mean, maybe that's forced from them living in a house for 2 weeks before they started shooting, but and also just the fact that I'm a huge fan of Michael B. Jordan. But those were my favorite scenes in the movie. What about you guys? Did you guys have a favorite scene or favorite collection of sequences that jumps out at you?
In particular, I would honestly say maybe like some of the scenes when they're still trying to get together. Although that was really abrupt at the beginning when it went from them blacking out, waking up, and then all of a sudden they're doing this test where, like, this is the ball test. I'm like, what's going... What? Why? What are you... The ball test, they're just, like, throwing the ball as hard as they can at each other. And I was like, what are they trying to do? Because at first I was like, oh, they're trying to do telekinesis. They're trying to catch the ball with their minds. And then it was like, no, because they already kind of figured out that they were, like, impervious. And then I got really confused for a second because they just kept on, like, beaning each other with it. And I was like, this is...
I don't know. Teenage boys, isn't it just about who can hit who the hardest?
Yeah, maybe. Honestly, I think the scene that I thought was the best with, like, them pulling pranks... Well, like, specifically them pulling pranks. Like, I probably could have used another 30 minutes of, like, the one guy trying to pull gum out of that person's mouth, or them wheeling that cart around that toy store and that lady running after it.
Yeah, that was good.
And then the other one, my favorite gag in the entire film is where he's just like, mysterious or local man finds the mother, you know, Mary Magdalene in his syrup, and then he just does it with his mind. He's like, hey, could you come over here? Yeah, could you just look at this? And he's like, ah! I was just like, that was probably the funniest thing I saw. But like, yeah, those scenes, like, they're such levity to, like, what otherwise is happening with Andrew's character at home that, like, maybe that's probably why they're so enjoyable. And it's, like, them trying to figure out what they can do with these powers. So, like, other than the plate thing with the syrup, like, those are the things, like, some of the more practical things where, like, they didn't have to rely on CGI. That stuff is just something, oh, yeah, and when they scared the little girl with the teddy bear, which is, like, the...
That was really good.
That's so terrible. But those scenes, like, if we're talking about, like, how the arcs work for these characters and where they were when the movie started to where they ended, like, I could say something about the story and that, but for the most part, like, I could have easily just used, like a feature-length film where they're just messing around and have little character beats here and there as opposed to, like, an actual story. But maybe that's just, like, the more indie-minded version of myself thinking that way. Because I was just like, oh, yeah, what if the Jackass guys had, like, telekinesis? Like, let's see a movie about that, you know? But that's why that stuff was, I thought, was so great. Because, like, it's super low stakes. These are high school boys who are just being dumbasses and doing this stupid stuff with their powers. So that's why those scenes are my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. No, definitely. All right, Caitlin?
I think my favorite scene is really just at the end when Andrew just beats the shit out of his dad.
Okay.
And then the one in, I don't know, the one where after he tries to go, after he blows up the gas station and he's in the hospital room and his dad comes in and is like being his usual dick self and he's like screaming at him and like, your mother's dead and it's your fault that I wasn't there and all this stuff. And it's just kind of like, I mean, because throughout the film, like, you know that his dad is incredibly abusive, like, emotionally, physically, and put that on top of, like, your mother being sick and then your mother being, like, super ill. Like, I'm not surprised. I like the storyline that they had for Andrew because it makes total sense. And his dad is a huge a-hole. And then at the very end, when he, like, his arm just raises up and he grabs his dad's hand and then the whole room explodes, like, I don't know, just inside I'm just like, yeah, fuck yeah, like, it's great, I love it. And I don't know, I feel like you're not supposed to root for him, but at the same time, like, I can't help it.
Is Andrew your favorite character?
I don't know, like, I really like Steve because he just, I don't know, I feel like he's kind Michael of the B. glue Jordan. I know, yeah. Right, and he's just so charming. No, I feel like he's kind of the glue in the little triad, and, I don't know. Yeah, Michael B. Jordan is just such a good actor, and I don't know if it's how the character was written or how he played him, but he's just so likable, and you just know that he's really kind of, like, the middle of the road, like,
we it's
enjoyable to watch.
We did catch some really fun things at his funeral. Some of the pictures of him as a little kid are 100% taken from when he was on The Wire.
Oh, totally. It's little Wallace, for yeah. sure. 100% Wallace.
Which was pretty funny.
It's good stuff.
It wouldn't have been so obvious if his hair hadn't been braided.
Yeah.
But it was great.
He looked the exact same. It was
really That's cool. so funny. That's like that in Boston Legal with William Shatner, where they just used old footage from an old lawyer show that he did, like, in black and white mm-hmm. as, like, a flashback what? For that show. It's a pretty good yeah, episode. It's pretty funny.
When they had an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Danny DeVito has to get his license, and I'm, like, 90% sure that the license he uses, because the joke is that his license has been expired for, like, 40 years. I'm, like, 90% sure that his license that he uses is his license from the TV show Taxi.
That's amazing.
That's pretty good.
That is so Which great. I
thought was really funny.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah. No. Donnie, do you have a favorite character?
I actually think Matt was my favorite character. Like we said, played by Alex Russell. He's my favorite character because he starts off, he's kind of the cooler cousin to Andrew, or supposedly cooler, and he just kind of, like, he kind of tolerates Andrew, but he's trying to, you know, like, be his friend, because they're cousins, so there's that bond between them, where he's family, but he's not so close to being his family that he has, like, you know, he has his dying mother and, like, also his abusive father. So, like, who else is he going to turn to? And he's too shy to make other friends until, you know, this thing happens. And then, like, him and Steve start becoming better friends. But Matt is just kind of, like, this guy who just likes to... He's into philosophy and into, like, Jung and Freud and stuff like that. And he, like, is, like, at the beginning of the movie, just, like, spits out these philosophy things to just kind of impress people, or, like, he probably actually thinks it, but, like, it shows that he's kind of, like, he's putting himself out there to try to become a better person or try to figure stuff out. But then when he finally gets his powers and, like, starts to use them a bit, he actually starts figuring out who he is. Like, he's not the smartest person in the world, and he's not, like, the best with the powers, but he's probably the one who is the closest to being, like, a Superman, where he is, like, I had ideas of being a cop, and, like, I don't know if I'll actually go that way, but I want to try doing stuff, you know, that is going to help people, and, where, like, if Steve had lived, like, he probably would have done more with his powers to make him famous, or, you know, like, he's not, like, a bad person, but he'd probably be, like, more in positions of power with it. And then we all saw what happened with Andrew. He just kind of, like, he turned into a villain. But Matt is, like, and also at the end of the film, he's the only one that's left alive. And he is, he just kind of, like, is, I would say probably the, I'd want to say I was a Matt, but I'm probably really an Andrew. Like, it depends on, like, who you, like, identify with the most. And, yeah. like, Matt is the person that, like, I would wish that I was when, if I got these powers. But I know I'd probably just be, like, an angsty teenager like Andrew. So that's why I like Matt the most. Like, he genuinely has, like, real concern about what's happening with Andrew. And then he's finally dating this girl that he's always liked. And then, you know, from there, it's, there's just enough there that, like, I was surprised they spent more time with the two other characters than Andrew, and Matt is the one that I like the most.
And we should mention that you are a teenager.
Yes, it's true. I mean,
you are 16 years old.
I'm 13 going on 30, you know?
Yeah. Yep. 13 going on 16. Been 13 for a couple of years now. Very excited.
I'm Bart
stuff.
Simpson. It's fine.
All right. One of the things that I really, I know that we all kind of applauded the way that they shot this movie, and like their justification for the found footage angle, and how they were able to keep one, keep the camera going, and two, keep it moving. Because that's the biggest thing, right? With most found footage movies, I mean, at some point, you're going to put the camera down.
Yeah.
And you're going to realize that whatever's going on is not as important as you holding the stupid camera. But another thing that I think we can all agree on that I really, really liked is how they were able to define their powers without coming out and being like, we got this, and we got this.
Look it, I can do this. Yeah. Look, I can do this with my mind.
And a great example of that is when they do the ball test, right? I mean, Donnie's 100% right. I have no idea what exactly they're trying to prove when they first start that test. All I know is that when they stop the test, they're able to catch the ball with their mind.
I mean, I stand by my theory. They're trying to see who can hit the others the hardest with their mind.
But they're throwing it with their hands.
Yeah, and, like, their powers. I don't know. Like I said, I watched, like, only the last, like, what, half an hour, 40 minutes.
And then I think that probably would have worked a lot better with the scene that's later in the diner. Where they didn't just do the baseball thing. They should have done a telekinesis thing with the baseball thing. And then later in the diner, when he's just like, put your hand on the table. And then he just like stabs the fork as hard into it. He's like, you broke the fork. He's like, come on.
Wait, so they're like throwing the baseball at each other?
They are throwing the baseball straight at each other.
Hard as they can.
Do these three know each other from like a baseball team?
No.
No.
Well, then that's a stupid concept. It's a very stupid concept.
I'm sure they were just like, oh, what do you got in your car? Let's see what we can do. Like, because here's the course of events.
Yeah, but if I've like never played baseball, I'm not going to be like, you know how I'm going to test your powers? I'm going to throw something that I'm not used to throwing.
The arrangement that they make before they actually start hitting each other is that they're supposed to throw it underhand.
They'd be like, under, yeah, he's like, you said underhand, and then one was overhand, and then just hit him, like, straight in the chest or the shoulder, and then the next one is one of the other guys throwing it at his feet and then bouncing it up into his face, like, uppercuts Michael B. Jordan, and the other one does, like, a curveball where he throws it and then, presumably with his telekinesis, like, whips it around and, like, hits him in the side of the head. So, like,
I'm still calling BS.
What? Are you saying this wasn't real?
It doesn't make... No, like, I just think that concept is stupid because, like, okay, he's gonna take the ball and, like, is he using his powers to throw it, like, at the person's chest?
No, we don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that they
that's
really
why because
if you're not used to throwing
a
baseball, you're not going to be able to aim.
I think they were trying to do it to
use their brain powers to control the ball.
To stop the ball, because that's what winds up happening is Dane DeHaan stops the ball with his
Well, this is now
powers.
My least favorite scene.
I honestly think, I don't think we're separated enough from, like, Jackass when this movie released in 2012 that they shouldn't have just opened up that scene with that. Like, specifically use that joke as a launching point to explain exactly what they're doing. Be like, hey, my name's, you know, Johnny Knoxville, and this is baseball to the face. And then he'd be like, oh, he's throwing the baseball right at his face. Oh, he doesn't,
that would've
he heals
funny.
From it, or he doesn't, like, die from getting a baseball right to the, like, to the nose.
I will say that a movie that does do this better is Shazam, which came out last year.
Yeah.
When they just jot down the different tests that they have Billy undergo.
Mm-hmm. And they do a really good, like, they have a camera and they, like, record it and they just, like, yeah, he says it. He says what they're doing, like, flying test number 6.
Watching him try to, watching them try to fly is one of the funniest things to me.
Yeah.
Seeing him run up the half pipe
mm-hmm.
and then immediately fall back down.
But, okay.
All right. So, yeah, no, I think that the way they define their powers is great. Before we get into talking about a sequel, this is a very bare bones movie. There is only 120 minutes to it. My question to you guys is there anything that you wish that they would have spent more time on?
I'm glad you said that, Jason. Because...
Caitlin?
No, go ahead, Donnie. Donnie's, like, real excited for this, so go ahead.
They did not do enough with the mother in this film. I feel like they set it up that she was sickly and the father was abusive, but from that point, then... I don't think they did enough scenes between Andrew and his mother to have it hit as much, because the whole thing about them doing the test and, like, him hanging out with his cousin and his friend is that, like, that's the levity. Like, they're boys being boys, like, they're blowing off steam, they're away from home, and then, like, every time that Andrew's back at home, then it's like, I feel like they could have used a little bit more, they should have doubled down on, like, the emotional part with his mom and maybe gone a little bit further with, like, how abusive his dad was. Not just, like, physically, but verbally, and then from there. And also maybe show the other side of that and maybe give him a little bit of humanity. Because I thought that was happening in the hospital for a moment, is that, like, he was breaking down after the mother died and said, like, oh, like I'm here, like, I'm so sad that this happened to you while, you know, your mother died. And then he just, like, wraps around to being, you know, like, he just hates him, you know, mm-hmm. like, he didn't actually have any good feelings or, like, concern for his son. I feel like there could have been more there, but with as much time as this movie had, I'm glad we had as much time with the boys just hanging out. But I feel like there's a darker movie here, and it's more the runtime being spent in Andrew's home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would have liked that, even though, like, the film as it is a good balance.
It is. I'm amazed that I like this movie as much as I do, because I did not think that I was going to enjoy it at all the first time I sat down to watch it.
Yeah.
Caitlin?
So what I wish they had worked more on is, the tagline to the movie, actually, okay. Which is, not all heroes are super, which I think is the, thank you! I think that's the complete opposite of what this movie is.
Yeah.
It should be, not all supers are heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it should really be, because they all have superpowers, but, like, none of them are heroes. I feel like the only one that you could... I mean, you could kind of say Michael B. Jordan's character was, Donnie, are you going to be okay?
I'm just thinking of good taglines. Like,
oh, okay.
If it was made today, it'd be like, just guys being super dudes, you know, or like...
I mean, the other one that I saw on a movie poster was Boys Will Be Boys, or Boys Being Boys, or something like that.
Boys to Supermen. Boys to
Shut
Supermen.
Up, Donnie.
So...
No, it's great.
It's so,
no,
it's so
not.
Good.
Here, let's see if I can find it.
Boys in the Crimson Hood?
Boys Will Be Boys.
That's a stupid fucking tagline.
Yeah, both of these are terrible. They should have spent way more money and way more time coming up with better taglines.
But, you know,
Fly Boys?
It kind of fits because the title of this movie is pretty stupid as well.
Chronicle of what?
No, it makes sense because he videotapes the whole thing.
Yeah.
True.
He chronicles it.
It's fucking stupid.
What's.
It's
no.
It's not enough, though. I feel like there's a bigger title with Chronicle in the name, and someone's like, no, it's gotta be one name. Or it's
okay,
gotta
that's
be one
true.
Word.
I feel like Chronicle is important to the title, though, because it's not just a movie about these kids who got these powers. It's about, like, his story telling about him and his friends. Like, if it hadn't been found footage, then no, it shouldn't have been called Chronicle. But because it had, like, a found footage, like, aspect to it, then I feel like it's the perfect name.
See, it doesn't work for me because the idea that, like, when I hear Chronicle, I think of, like, this epic story to span all stories, all worlds.
I mean,
worlds.
You don't think their story was epic?
No, it doesn't conjure up like the something like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or something, or The Matrix.
I guess I don't. I mean, Lord of the Rings, I guess I would think of Chronicle, but I guess
Chronicles of Narnia.
Barf.
Riddick.
Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, those are Chronicles.
I only have,
there's
like,
many.
Two movies.
There are three. There's technically four.
Plus an animated movie.
Man, that anime good.
Jeez, Caitlin.
Jeez, Collective Jace, did you see how quickly they turned on me?
Right, hey, don't you dare talk bad about my boy Riddick. Richard B. Riddick. Such a good name.
Richard B. Riddick.
That's his name. And the B stands for badass.
Aw, does it really? I was hoping it was Bobbert, so his name was Bob Bob.
Did you say Bobbert?
Yeah.
Yes,
Richard Bobbert Riddick.
We're going to figure that out in the next Riddick movie, what his actual middle name is.
No, I've already told you. It's Bobbert.
It's Bobbert.
The Big Bobbert.
You Big Bobbert. I will say this. As bad as Jason says Chronicle is a bad title for this movie, it's not as bad as Brightburn. I hate Brightburn. That title is
Yeah,
bad.
Why did they call it Brightburn?
It's the name of the town. It's
oh,
like,
that's right.
It's like calling a Superman origin story Smallville. Oh, wait, they did a whole show. And look how that turned out.
Do you know what they
did?
Didn't
it turn out really well? I thought it was popular for, like, ever.
Yeah, you're a huge fan of that show, Donnie.
Shut up. No, like, it's campy fun. Like, it's something you watch, like, when you want something a lot lighter than, like, a Buffy. Or, like, you're in
yeah.
the mood for something that's not as... It's like, it's more mythos and teen angst with people playing someone who's much older than a teen. And I don't know, it's more soap opera than anything.
It's like Smallville and then like Arrow.
I don't want to talk about any of the DC shows, honestly.
Okay, so let's talk about the sequel that Josh Trank keeps mentioning might happen. What do you guys, are you guys pro-sequel or anti-sequel?
I would be pro-sequel as long as it didn't involve,
the continuing chronicles of Matt.
Matt, that's his name. See, he left such a small impression that I didn't even remember his character's name.
Wow.
I'm just kidding, Donnie. I would love to see a sequel, but that had nothing to do with Matt. Because I think it would be interesting, because it was this hole that they found that had a gem in it and we don't know anything about it. So I think it would be really interesting to see something along these lines in a different part of the world. Like some other kids, like, find, you know, are spelunking or cave exploring or whatever, and same thing happens, but their story is different. I think it would be really interesting, because then you could tie in a bunch of, I don't know, like, what is the mystery? You could totally tie it in like, a third movie.
Donnie?
I would not want a sequel to this movie. After hearing what Max Landis wanted to do with the planned trilogy that he was thinking about, we're good.
Ooh. What was that?
Who is Max Landis?
The writer.
Max Landis is the writer, also known creep and Hollywood pervert, who no one should like. If you want to see how crazy he is, look up the Carly Rae Jepsen stuff that he did. Yeah, I'm not joking about that. He is a weirdo and not a good person. However, this is what he said. He said that he was going to... So Matt was going to figure out that the creatures were called, like, Mogos. This is in the Wikipedia, if anyone wants to read it.
I'm already not down for this.
Yeah, where they figure out that they were, like, crystal beings... And that's what the thing that they touch at the beginning is to get their powers, is that was a living creature that was, like, dying. And the original purpose of the Mogos is to, like, make drones out of humans and to, like, feed off their energy. It's really, like, I don't like... And I'll give him credit for this, because he said... He was just going to give a simple, dumb explanation for those creatures so that the reason or the thing that you focus on is the characters instead. So I give him props there because he's like, oh, well, I'm just going to make this stupid explanation and then it's the characters you actually should worry about.
So this is basically psychic Animorphs.
I mean, Animorphs is psychic Animorphs.
What was the writer's name again?
Of what?
Max Landis.
Thank you.
The son of the other Landis that's famous.
John?
John Landis, correct. Oh, yeah. Yep. MOGO is standing for Massive Omnivorous Geodesic Organisms.
Well, that sounds fucking stupid. So what, he would just figure that out and then it would end?
No, they would... At some point, they would have that be revealed in one of the sequels and be like, oh, that's it? Where this is what it says on here is that those crystal beings create drones out of humans, and then the humans are like zombies, essentially, to get protein to help them live because they're dying out, to have the humans do it too, and that one of the sequels was going to be like a whole city like got turned into drones, and then like Matt or somebody who had superpowers would have to... like, fight a bunch of drones. See, like, the explanation's so dumb, and then he says, like, it's the characters that, like, you should focus on, not the thing that's the backstory of it. Pretty much what this film did.
Well, that sequel sounds really stupid.
It does. I really hope they don't make another one, and that we just stick with the one Chronicle.
Yeah, I think this works as a standalone. I think the ending works pretty well. And this is however what I think they should do, which is, hey, if they make a sequel, instead of all boys, why don't you make them all girls, and then might as well just do a live action Powerpuff Girl movie, honestly.
Yep,
that's it.
Yes,
that's my only idea.
All right, cool. I'm gonna say I would also very much be against them doing a sequel. Although I am really excited to see Josh Trank's new movie come out, and I hope that he doesn't have a repeat of Fan 4 Stick on his hands. Because he is making an Al Capone movie.
With Tom Hardy.
Which I am very excited about. All right.
It's not even the right actor.
Jason.
I'm tired.
Are we
okay.
Not enjoying these voices tonight.
You never enjoyed my voices. Okay, so this week I have been watching a new TV show, and it's called Too Old to Die Young, and it is Nicholas Winding Refn's TV show on Amazon Prime. Caitlin's upset that I have not yet watched The Boys, and said I am taking my time to watch this on the exact same streaming service. I've also been listening to the band Big Thief and Air Traffic Controller a lot. And watch more NC-17 movies. That's all I have to say about that.
Filthy.
Donnie, you have anything you want to tell people about?
Let me run it down. So, quick anime recommendations that I've been watching. I finally started watching Neon Genesis Evangelion. Pretty much
so good.
The Citizen Kane of anime. if you want to watch that, it's on Netflix. They finally got the rights, so everyone can watch it now. And it's a slow burn. It's good audio design. I think it actually, I have to get through all of it to have a official opinion on it, but it is pretty good so far, like 10 episodes in.
Speaking as someone who has watched all of it, that shit is gonna fuck with your head.
That's what I
and
heard.
You are gonna love it.
I can't wait to finish the series and then watch, like, the two movies after it and then watch the remake movies that they made, like, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Too much Neon Genesis.
So good.
The other thing that I've been watching is Dr. Stone, which is an anime about everyone who gets petrified and then jumps forward 3,700 years where everyone gets unpetrified and then they have to recreate science, and it's fun. Only on Crunchyroll, though.
Anime?
Anime.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And that's my anime 3 minutes, I think, is what I saw.
That's Donnie's anime analysis.
From there, I just have three other things that I won't linger on. Please play, if you play video games, play Doom 2016, because that's a very good video game. Jason? Are you guys just poking each other's noses?
Yes.
Okay, that's fair. So that's a very good game. It's one of my favorite games. So if you like video games, play that. I've just played the first episode of The Wolf Among Us, which is a Telltale series, and the second one has been announced, so that'll be coming out at some point in the next few years.
What?
Yeah. And then also,
I thought Telltale was done.
They got bought out by somebody, and then they're selling the stuff and they're making new stuff, but it's not the original Telltale.
I can live with that.
And then the final thing I have to recommend is something I found that is just one of those gems you can find if you fall down a YouTube rabbit hole, is please watch Variety's Actors on Actors series on YouTube, because it's some of the best conversation I've seen between, like, two people and some of the episodes are, like, 10 minutes long, some episodes are, like, 30 or 40, but the one you should definitely start with is the Adam Driver and Michael Shannon one, because that Actors on Actors video is so good. So good.
Visual reference for an audio medium, but when Donnie said that, Jason and I both whipped our heads, I don't know, as fast as humanly possible.
Yikes.
That's my call sign. If I hear Michael Shannon.
Mine's Adam Driver.
I'm running.
Uh-huh. And then there's the other one I'd recommend after that is watching the Willem Dafoe and Hugh Jackman one. Because
what?
Those are two super pleasant dudes who, like, I swear, like, some of the episodes of that thing, you see, like, oh my god, these are, like, soulmates that haven't, like, ever talked, and they're finally meeting, and you're seeing, like, true love blossom. And then there's other episodes of that series where you're just like, these people, like, have nothing in common, and they're, like, trying to get through this interview, like, as quick as possible. The most interesting one I found recently, I won't go on too much longer, but watch the Kristen Stewart and Shia LaBeouf one, because that one is weird.
What?
Very good.
Does Willem Dafoe happen to talk about how freakishly huge his penis is?
That has not come up, but I understand why he's happy most of the time now.
All right, Caitlin, what do you got?
Well, now I'm going to watch that.
Willem Dafoe's freakishly huge penis?
I wish I could watch Willem Dafoe's freakishly huge penis. Sounds terrifying. More terrifying than Rosemary's Baby.
It scared Lars von Trier.
I will plug a band I've been listening to lately that's really good is they're called Oso Oso. It's O-S-O-O-S-O. I'm really a big fan of theirs. And I guess the other thing is season 3 of The Sinner is coming out, so watch that. Watch the other seasons. Jessica Biel, I am actually not a fan of hers, and she is really, really good. It kind of changed my opinion of her. She's in season 1.
Ooh, you know what else we got? Last season of BoJack coming up soon.
Yes.
Caitlin and I are going to be emotional next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much does it. Next time we do a show, it's going to be released in February, which means we're going to be doing it on a romantic film.
Oh. Bouncing.
So.
Wow, wow. That's the right noise, right?
Yes, sure. It is. Okay. Good job.
We're going to be dedicating all of February to romantic films, so you can very much look forward
Why?
To that.
You can look
We're broadening
to
our horizons.
You can look forward to me not being on too many episodes.
Well, Caitlin hates romance.
Four, so. She does. That's why she married me.
I don't... Well...
Hail Satan and watch more movies. Thank you so much for listening, you dumb fucks. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.